I would like to tell you a story. Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest knife treat ovens available. Find your next heat treat oven at evenheat-kiln.com.
How's it going, everybody, and welcome to another episode, another fine episode of Knife Talk. I'm here with our fearless leader, Mr. Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, and our bantering badass buddy boy, I don't know, sorry about that, Jeff. Jeff Bader.
No, that's fine.
But we're here to talk knives, we're here to kind of learn some stuff from each other, we're here to answer your questions.
It's been a wild, wild week. These last few weeks into the end of the 2018 have been a little bit hectic. I recently had some problems with a piece of Damascus last episode. I got the new piece of Damascus in. I made the knife. The heat treat went great. Thanks to you, I used Mareko's ferric chloride treatment, and I did do the coffee etch, which was amazing. It was an incredible experience. I used exactly what you said. I got the classic Nescafe Classico, and I put it in a bucket. I put in a quart of water, and I boiled it up, and then I took some cold water and I put it in there, and I made a huge mistake. The mistake was I tasted it. It was one of those tastes where it's like that smell when you smell something and it comes at you like really, really hard. When you're supposed to drink, if you're supposed to drink that instant coffee, you're only supposed to drink like one tablespoon per cup.
Right.
Well, we're putting the whole container in for like for a quart, and it was like it was.
Have you not
so
slept for a week?
It was so intense. I was like, oh my God. But it wasn't like, this is strong coffee. This was like, I think I fucked up my stomach lining. Like, it was so strong and it's so disgusting. And I was like, this tastes horrible, but it's got to work. And it did. I was stunned at how well it worked. I actually just coffee etched that knife yesterday. And I was amazed at how it went from the contrasting colors going from brown to over time to go black. And it was stunning. And just as you said, that finish does not come off. You can't get that finish off. So it was a dynamite finish. I'm super stunned. I'm just finishing it up now. And thanks to you, I got that squared away.
There's been a lot of love for that coffee routine as well.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of
Instagram,
people
sending us pictures, all sorts.
Damn right, and well worth it too, because it was awesome, totally awesome.
I haven't tried the coffee yet, and I feel terrible. I feel like I got to try it now that you've tried it, and I've been doing this for 4 years now.
I mean, we are talking like it isn't coffee anymore;
putrid.
It's something else.
Putrid.
And when I stored it in these glass mason jars to get to my studio.
Yeah.
And the other thing I loved, I'm so glad you mentioned, was the fact.
Sorry,
that
Jeff. Jeff, to get to where did you say sorry then?
Oh shit! You caught me. Shit! You caught me. You're fucking right. That good for you. God
well, you've
damn
got,
it!
You've got this fancy new coffee machine there. So I suppose it's a studio now. It's a studio.
I have a really nice fucking coffee machine. I'm now Fader Knives is sponsored by Nespresso. Nespresso sent us a coffee machine. So Tony brought it up, and you know what? I'm a piece of shit. Maybe I am. Maybe this is a studio. But I had to transfer the fucking this. I had to transfer the goddamn the coffee etch into these mason jars, and it was so thick.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like the coffee that you imagine. I mean, it was like beyond sludge.
Yeah.
It just was incredible
like
to me.
Syrup
it was incredibly. Oh, yeah, exactly. It was just like totally syrup. To my shop, I fucked up. You got me. Good job. Good job, Craig. Well done. Don't let me slip.
Well, I've been amazingly, I've had time to get back into the studio this week. So working on lots of orders, trying to get out as much as I can before Christmas. I've been working on more sort of resin casts as well for handles and finally got a sort of recipe that I'm happy with. So the biggest issue with casting sort of organic materials in a resin is that they'll rot even, you know, it's obviously airtight, but they're still going to rot. So I had a tip from somebody, and that's, I'm using the stuff that the like butterfly collectors use. You know, when the butterfly collectors, they get rare species, and they almost embalm them before putting them in resin. Yeah, so I've got some of that stuff.
Yeah, so like taxidermied vegetables and fruit.
Almost. Exactly. Yeah. So it's completely sealing it, and it's keeping the colors quite vibrant. So again, more testing with that this week. It seems to be working a lot better with this stuff, but only time will tell. So that's been left out, sort of out in the sun, out in the weather, just to see how, whether that degrades or not. But looking good so far. Looking very good.
So we saw that you did the tomatoes. What other vegetables are you giving a whirl? What works and what doesn't work?
Anything with moisture in it is difficult. Because simply the moisture is going to dry out and it's not going to work. So, for example, with the tomatoes, they were dehydrated first. Then they will put in this butterfly collector juice, as I call it. And I'm using like herbs, that kind of stuff at the moment, dried herbs, because obviously they're dry anyway. And they look quite vivid. Beetroot. Also, I've got some beetroot on the go at the moment because that's a really vivid colour. So we'll see. We'll see. But it's looking promising so far. So as well as that, it's just been, as I say, getting knives out. I've got plans for 2019, so working on them a little bit. And just sort of wrapping up, really, for the year, because you know, it's nearly upon us.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
I've kind of been doing the same thing. I actually am getting ready to travel west. And I think by the time this airs, I'll be over in Washington State and no longer in Connecticut, at least just for the holidays. But anyhow... But yeah, I have a few days left, and so I'm just kind of working on tidying things up. I do have one build that I feel pretty confident I'm going to get done, but it's going to be kind of tight. But I've just been working on getting the handle set up and put together. The customer actually sent me the handle material, so it's always a little nerve-wracking when the customer sends the handle material, because then it's, you know, it's their cost on the handle material. If you screw it up, there's just one.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I've messed up blocks before, sadly. Actually, it's only one, but it was like a $200 piece of exhibition grade koa, and
wow,
it was fucking heartbreaking. And I've only seen actually a couple more pieces that were that level quality, but those were only recently in the last year, and this was like 3 or 4 years ago, like when I first started out on my own. So, but this is a beautiful buckeye burl. And it's all glued up tomorrow. I'm going to be back in the shop. I'm going to be it's getting a Japanese Western style profile or a handle sculpting. So, and what's frustrating is like the stainless Wootz knife that I just finished also had a Japanese cowboy, and I screwed that one up. Fortunately, that was my handle material, but I got one shot on this. And so I'm just going to take it slow, do my thing, not be distracted at all, because I just cannot afford for any mistakes to happen with this.
So, fortune favors the bold. Yeah. That's this. If it was easy, everybody would do it.
That's true. Yeah.
So we just mentioned Christmas is nearly here. I think when this airs, we've got 1 week to go. So I've been thinking about gifts for knife makers. I'm always being asked, you know, what do you want for Christmas from family members, that kind of thing. And I'm sure, you know, most of our listeners are too. So I thought we'd run through some little gifts that people could maybe put on their Christmas lists, or, you know, give hints to their partners, the kind of stuff they'd want.
Sure.
It's little stocking fillers, you know, little stuff that'll help around the shop. I'm going to start off with a Bill Behnke file guide, because I think everybody needs one. They're cheap. They're small. They're a good stocking filler for Christmas.
Yeah. I think it's a good move.
That's a good one.
And Jeff can attest, like, they're super versatile. It's actually surprising what kind of, all kinds of stuff that they're good for. And different.
I love Bill.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting because now maybe we can talk about something. Well, Mareko and I both got sent those radius platens that Bill's starting to make.
I did see. They look great.
They're amazing.
Those will fit in the stocking too.
That will spit in the stocking. It'll be like a club. You can like hit somebody on the head with it. But it's so basically like it's a 36 inch. That's right. Yeah, the old prison yard stocking, right?
Yeah, there you go.
And So he's starting to make, Bill's starting to make those Radius Platins, and I know that the ones that he's making now are, they're beautiful. He just sent us, he sent you one earlier, and then I think he sent you the second variation. And basically, they're awesome, and I know that now that he makes them, the holes are coordinated with the KMG style platins, but... You know what? I started to realize we are all very creative people. It doesn't really matter. Sure. All you have to do is just kind of drill a couple holes and drill a couple, you know, and then with on a plate, and you can make it work. It's not a big deal. But he is going to be making more for various grinder, platins. And what I thought is now, because a lot of people mentioned, I posted up and you posted up and started getting mentions, and it would be really good to kind of talk to people about it, about using those. And I just, you know, I know that we're doing Christmas gifts, but I just thought it would be a good idea to kind of talk about those platins. And Mareka, you use them all the time.
The Radius Platin,
right.
So every knife I grind, unless it's otherwise requested, my standard grind is the S grind, which is, you know, it's the hollow above a convex edge.
Right. So it's a bigger radius. Than you would get on just a regular contact wheel.
Yeah.
They're really great for that, you know, that food. It's all about that hollow that gives you that food release, that half an inch from your edge.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and it's effectively, you're removing material that would otherwise be sliding against your food. And anytime the food's in contact with the surface, it increases the friction and as you're cutting through stuff. So anything you can do to help reduce that friction, either a thin blade or a thin knife or doing the S grind, it's going to make a huge difference in how that knife performs and cuts.
Hmm. We've had a few questions actually come through to the Knife Talk Podcast Instagram account, because you guys obviously put your pictures up of these new platins. But they're asking then, if you're doing an S grind or a hollow grind, how are you then hand sanding? We had a few people ask that same question.
Yeah. I mean, so I posted up my hand sanding stick actually on the Knife Talk Instagram. If you're not following, what are you doing? Go follow us. But anyways, I made a hand sanding stick out of just a scrap piece of 2x4 that kind of fits into that contour in there, so that instead of, you know, typically on a blade, you have a flat hand sanding stick. So this one's contoured to fit in that hollow and get in there and scrub around and hand sand that, all up in there, get it all cleaned out. But that's basically, there's not a whole lot else you can do. Some people sandblast their blades, so that might be an easy way to get into the contours. I haven't played with that much, so I can't really speak to how effective it is, but I think people are getting good results. But the easiest thing you can do is just take a scrap piece of wood and cut it to kind of, and sand it up so it fits in that contour and kind of replicates that radius, and then start sanding in there.
Yeah. You just hold the wood up to the profile, and then you sketch out the profile of the radius, and then cut it out.
Exactly.
And then you can even stick on, you can even glue on some, you know, very thin rubber. If I've done that before.
It's a good move.
It's you know, a little bit of rubber to kind of get you in there. It's not that big of a deal. A couple of questions I was going to ask you, especially is
sure.
Well, one is that Adam from Built Sharp said he uses a chiller plate. With the Radius Platin, and he says that because to get the belt to kind of follow the profile of the Radius Platin, sometimes you get more friction on the belt than you would normally. That's why a lot of guys use a chiller plate, and that, I guess I'm imagining that it's just like a unit that you have like a bucket of ice, and it rotates ice water through the back of your platen. No, literally, it rotates the water,
Just water cooled.
Water cooled. Yeah, pump through. Yeah.
Now, do you need? And I just made the assumption that you don't use those.
No, I don't.
Need one?
I don't think you need one. I've been running my Radius Platin that I made for 4 years, 4.5 years now. I've never used a water chill, and there's nothing wrong with them. I never quite understood them though. I think people mistakenly think that they're helping to protect the blade from overheating from heat transfer from the platen through the belt to the blade. But the blade gets hot because it's in contact with that belt that's moving at high speed, and the friction from that is what's heating up the blade. It's not the heat in the platen. If anything, the purpose of water cooling a platen is to help preserve the belt. But the belts that I use, they're dead before any kind of like structural integrity, especially at the joint, is lost. So I've never concerned myself with water-cooled belts. And it's actually surprising how much cooler a radius platen actually grinds than a flat platen. I feel like because it is a radius, it kind of cuts a little bit more aggressively versus being flat. And
it's almost more of a pinpoint.
Yeah, it's focusing that pressure on that radius really helps get in there and cut some stuff out. And you know, I get that hollow in there in pretty short order. When I lay it out on even just on one side, it takes about 2-3 minutes, and then from there I'm just refining my scratches. But yeah, the friction that's and the heat that's happening in the blade is coming from the belt, not the platen. So I've never concerned myself with water cooled platens. I think they're cool. I think they're neat. I've never had use for them ever.
Ha 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 ha. They're cool.
Yeah, I didn't even realize I was doing that.
So the last question I had is, let's say someone's listening and say, I want to get this radius platen. And I just got one. Bill sent me one to use, and I can't wait to use it. Now, I would imagine if I were to put in an S-grind, and you tell me if I'm doing this wrong. This is, in my mind, I was trying to figure out what my procedure would be. And the first thing I would do would be to put on a flat platen and get my geometry close. And then, after I get on the flat platen, then I'm gonna hit it on the disc grinder, and then after I hit on the disc grinder, then I'm gonna hit it with the radius platen.
I think that's a good move. And I mean, we're kind of getting into notes to a young knife maker, describing how.
Oh, well, never mind. Then let's just leave it alone. Let's leave it alone. Then okay. Let's save it for the next thing. Let's save it for the end. But all right, we're gonna do that. I'm sorry, I didn't realize.
We'll get into it. Yeah, let's do it.
We'll get into it later. All right, so listen, now we got you now. Now you're screwed. The listeners got their pencil and they got their pen, and now they got to wait. So back to Christmas gifts.
Just to point out, too, that Bill Benke isn't sponsoring the show in any way. It's just not at all. We all use his stuff, and we all think it's great. That's all it is.
I have bought every single file guide. I have like 8 file guides from him. I have not asked for anything. I've not asked for discounts. Yeah. I'm happy to pay him. He's a dynamite guy, very forward thinking. I like him a lot, and I would never ask for anything for free for him. He sent it to me to use, and I can't wait to. And I want to try to move. We want to move some, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I thought of two little fun. One thing. I had a couple things, but I'll just go with one because we went so far in that radius plat. If you're doing like kind of outdoorsy knives. And you want a little something to get. You know what jimping is, Craig? You know about jimping?
I know what jimping is. It's the little grooves,
Yeah, the little grooves above your thumb.
Yeah.
You can get a checkering file. Ooh. And they're like $35. If you start to look up a jimping file, boy, you'll never find anything. J-I-M-P-I-N-G. You're never going to find it. It's called a checkering file. And they have different sizes. And it's your whole little, those little thumb marks at the top of your knife. Mm. It's all on one file. So all you're doing is you're doing one set of strokes and it cuts in all your lines at the same time. That Nice. Is a good little thing that you wouldn't normally think that would be good. Sure. But all of a sudden you have to start to like, if you were to fucking measure out those little marks and go with a hacksaw, you're out.
Oh my God.
Go get yourself a $35 jimping file. 5 passes, you got beautiful jimping.
Yep.
Nice.
There you go.
All right. Let's see. Stocking stuffers, gifts for knife makers. I would say something I absolutely love, and it's super simple, and it seems like I feel like most people should have one, but if you don't have one, a carbide scribe is such a useful tool to have. You use it for outlining and scribing and marking all kinds of stuff. I use it on my handle material when I'm getting ready to put in a hidden tang into the block. I scribe the outline because if I use markers or pencils or whatever, it eventually rubs off. But if I scribe that line in, it's in the wood. I'm not going to lose it until I'm ready for it to go away. And so a carbide scribe is a sweet tool, and it's just a little thing. Other little stocking stuffers, you can get on like, you know, you can find them online, but they're these little sets of machinist squares. I have a set that I got. It was four squares, and it's like a 2-inch, 3-inch, 4-inch, and a 6-inch. Those are awesome, too. I use those all the time. When it comes
to... Is that like a 1-2-3 block?
No, well, I mean, places that sell them, I'm just going to throw it out there, Grizzly, online. Like, you can get them at Grizzly. The 1-2-3 blocks are different. They're used... I don't know. People use them for all kinds of crazy stuff, as spacers, or to lift things up, or
they're good for drilling, for pass through.
Yeah,
for drilling.
Exactly, for pass through drilling. Actually, my carbide scribes that I have, shoulders, filing shoulders that I have, they're a different brand. We're not going to talk about them, but
yeah,
we love Bill Behnke. But anyways, I put in larger or longer roll pins. Dowel pins. I was using it for the integral bolster instead of just a flat blade, and so I needed more space in there. So I swapped out the 1¼ for 2¼, and I use a 1-2-3 block and my hydraulic press and just like a finish nail setting punch, and it just pushed it right out. Super easy. You could do it by hand too in a vise or even on your bench. But anyhow. Yeah, 1-2-3 blocks, little machinist squares, carbide scribe. I'd also say the only measuring thing I really use in the whole shop is a pair of calipers. I don't really measure a whole lot except for length, like a obviously tape measure. But outside of that, I don't measure my stuff, which sounds very imprecise. But I measure it by using it and seeing how it feels when I use it. If it doesn't seem to be working right, then I go back in and I kind of grind here and there. The calipers. I would say calipers are a great tool.
Hmm.
Otherwise, gift certificates are good. Harbor Freight. Get a gift certificate to Harbor Freight.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, yeah.
I've got a couple of quick ones, too, just really simple ones.
I got one more, too.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Okay. A head torch. Something really simple.
What is a head torch?
You know, those like miner's lamps that you put on your head.
Oh, you mean like a flashlight?
Yes, that on your head. So
a fucking head torch. I thought, what are you heat treating from your head?
No, a head torch. No. So a good example is when you're hand sanding, you want a really good light on there, and the light in my shop isn't the best. Mm. Now, I know a lot of you listeners, you've got dark and dank kind of shops, and you know, you're not letting much light in. So get a good head torch. You've got a really good direct beam of light onto whatever you're sanding. That's going to help.
There's some language barrier. I was looking at the show notes. I was like, what the fuck is a head torch? It's fine. Oh, flashlight for your head. Okay,
flashlight for your head. A flashlight for your head.
Nice. Okay.
Another very quick one is really simple, but a decent water bottle. You know, with a nice lid to it, so you're not going to get all the crap from the shop going into your water.
Right.
Because it's easy to forget to stay hydrated. You go and, you know, you can be really hot. You can be moving around a fair bit. So get a decent water bottle, get a good head torch, and you're away.
Stay hydrated. It's important. Yeah. I've been terrible about drinking water. It's just been getting colder and drier here. And the corners of especially my index finger and my thumb on my right hand, because I'm right hand dominant, so I'm always grabbing and using stuff with that. The corners are starting to crack super deep. And I think a big part of it is just I'm not drinking enough water because I get too distracted with whatever I'm doing.
Yeah, the skin on my hands always ends up looking like tree bark after a while, especially the colder it gets.
I saw it on that video.
Yeah, I tell you what, very funny. You know what? I was going to make a joke because when I was doing the coffee etch, I stupidly put my hand in thinking, it's just coffee. What's the big deal? My hand from my knuckles down to my fingertips were black. And I couldn't scrub it out. And I was like, oh my God. It etched my hand. I was like, what's a fucking coffee? I'm telling you, it was like my fingers were wearing stockings. It was black stockings. It was unbelievable.
Jeff, are you sure that now you're 48, that you haven't gone through a midlife crisis, you went to 45. A tanning salon and you had a dodgy
just
fake tan?
Just my fingers. Yeah, I had a dodgy fake. Yeah, 48. 45, and no, I didn't get a spray tan on my hands. Trust me. And they're still, like, the nails are, like, it's bad. Like, my sisters are coming to visit me, and they have their sculptors, too. So they're, like, their hands are all disaster, and we all stand around saying whose hands are the worst. And it's going to be, I'm going to win this year. It's
nice.
Terrible. Oh, by a mile. I got
I'm
that
proud
coffee
of you.
Etch. The coffee etch is like, oh, my God. To wear gloves when you do the coffee etch. Last thing I would suggest for the Christmas gifties is I am a big Corby Bolt man, and I love them. I love everything about them. If you're going to use a Corby Bolt, gotta get the – it's called – they're called rivet drill bits. And usually the places – yeah, I thought they were called step bits too, but if you look up what a step bit is, it's not going to come up. And what these knife supply companies do that are smart is usually they'll sell you the Corby Bolt, and then underneath they'll say, if you're buying this, you should use the right bit for it. So basically it's not really a bit. It's you have to think of more of a countersink. Yeah. So the way Corby works is you got two ends, and they're very – the heads are very on the long side, and then there's a thread, and then there's a nut, but there's a shoulder. It's a very light shoulder, and you need to set that shoulder in, and these rivet drill bits give you a super, super tight, precise countersink bit, a countersink hole for your Corbys, and it's like, don't fool around with just getting a drill bit and try to oversize the hole. It don't work. Mm-hmm. These – you got to get that. You got to pay like $20 for the drill bit, but it'll give you that exact shoulder that you need for the Corbys. I love them.
I actually thought of one more thing. It's great. I have one.
Go ahead.
If you love the show and you love what we're doing here, you know what you should really do? You should get a Knife Talk t-shirt, which you can find on knifetalk.net. Yeah. Show some love. We appreciate the support. But for also, your favorite knife maker... Oh, don't get it for your wife, though. She's going to be like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. That's the – you know, the funny thing is when you came up with this bit, Craig, I thought, the people who are listening to this are not – they're going to like, hey, honey, here's your 3-2-1 block that you always wanted. She's going to be like, what the fuck is this?
No, it's not.
Yeah.
I'm always being asked, what do I want for Christmas? I never know. I just, I don't know, I say. But, you know, hopefully people, they now have a list. They now have a list.
Yeah. I always say, leave me alone.
One thing to say about those t-shirts.
Yeah.
This is probably your last opportunity to buy the current t-shirt. All right. We've been working on new designs. So in the new year, we're going to have a new t-shirt every month. We've got some epic designs coming up. So this is your last opportunity to buy the current t-shirt. But stand by for some awesome new
shirts. We're all going to design some t-shirts. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
Craig's Community Showcase.
It's going to be me this time. I'm not Craig. I'm Jeff. I was going to add...
What's up, Jeff?
Well, how are you? We might have to add a few, you know, just to make sure that this is a real Christmas. We should tell a few Christmas stories at the end. But, you know, we'll see where we're at. Oh. So for this week's Craig's Community Showcase by me, Jeff, is I really wanted to give a big – you got to support these guys. They're called Very Good Knife Making Supplies. And they're actually – it's a knife making supply company that they make different colored micartas. And it's run by friends of ours,
Jackie Awesome,
Adam Balkovic, and I think that's how you pronounce it. That's how I'm pronouncing it. And Jackie Awesome from Built Sharp Knives. They figured out Adam and Jackie make beautiful knives, and their handles are always – the colors of their handles are always just like – I always wondered, where do they get those colors? Well, they're making these amazing new shades of micarta that you don't find very often. Mm. Lots of different tones and shades.
I don't think you find them anywhere.
No, you don't find them anywhere. I actually am finishing off –
they're pretty rad.
12 knives that are going to go down to this restaurant, and they wanted turquoise. And I'm like, well, I don't know where you get turquoise. I called up Adam. Adam said, I'll make you some turquoise. And he knocked out these beautiful scales for me. I told him how much I needed. I even gave him the dimensions I wanted, the scales. He cut them out for me. He got them right up. But they're doing colors that you don't find at all. And it's a lot of tones. It's a lot of shades. They're really beautiful. I just got a pile of them, and they were really, really well milled. They're beautiful. There was no weirdness. All the colors were the same. And they're friends of the show. Jackie Awesome's terrific. She's fantastic. And her husband, Adam, is awesome. They make awesome knives. But they're doing really, really great things. So I really want you to all go to Very Good Knife Making Supplies. And you should see it. You can see them. They're putting them up. I don't think their website is ready to take orders, but I think that they're just slowly kind of getting it squared away. But they have a lot of stuff, and you can contact them. They make beautiful, beautiful micarta colors that I've never seen before.
I've got a question about that paper micarta. Yeah. So I've used micarta in the past, which is cloth, but when you grind at an angle, you see the different layers. Do you see that in the paper?
I'll be honest with you. If you told me it was G10, I would have believed you. One of the reasons why is because G10 always has had very vibrant colors. So I haven't seen a lot of vibrant colors out of micarta, but this is like, I mean, no, the answer is no. With this paper micarta, it's just like it's like a solid block. But generally, with a lot of the canvas micarta, you see that kind of like those layery things, but it's great. I mean, it's beautiful. And you know what? I wouldn't even mind if it were a little bit of texture on the side, because they're going to be seeing it from the sides. But I'm amazed at what they're doing. You know, they make beautiful knives, and I just can't believe they have enough time to make these really, really beautiful colors. Very unique. No one's doing colors like this.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
I got a set of them scales too, and I'm really looking forward to using them and putting through the test. I think they're going to come out really nice.
And I needed the colors. I said, what happened was I was just like, well, let me see what Adam. So I sent Adam a message, and he says, hey, I'll get those colors for you. I mean, he built the slabs. Like, I needed enough for 12 knives. He knocked them out fast. And they were beautiful. And I think that they're going to lead the way in terms of kind of this new color that people don't normally get. So. Very good knife making supplies. Jackie Awesome and Adam Balkovic of Built Sharp Knives.
Yeah, and they're knife makers too. They know their stuff.
I think that they've been doing it for themselves for a while, and they're just like, you know what? Everyone's asking where you get these things, and I think I make it. And I think that they were, you know, their colors. They're very. I've always felt like they both have very high concept color choices. The tones that they use, the contrast.
They remind me of Le Creuset. They remind me of colors, Le Creuset.
There's a lot of those kind of like not primary colors, these kind of off tones that are just they vibrate off each other. I know there's one picture of these variations of like a blue and turquoise going into green. They're really, really giving you beautiful. It's kind of like I know what you're talking about. I was going to come up with a different. Who cares? They're great. Go get them.
He was also just featured in Blade magazine a couple months ago, I think.
Yeah, they're badasses. He's an insane machinist. Good work. Their shit is tight.
Hey man, can I ask you a question?
We've had plenty of questions this week. I'm gonna jump straight in because we've got quite a few.
Can I just add to? I wanted to amend last week's episode.
Sure.
Like last week's episode, somebody asked about heat treating with a torch. And Mareko and I were like, I don't heat treat with a torch. It's crazy. I still think it's crazy. However, I got a message from Burroughs Forge, and he told me about a book. It's called Forging and Finishing the Brute to Forge Knife by Joe Kiesler. And I actually have that book, and you can get it. You can go to the American Bladesman Society, and they sell it. So it's called Forging and Finishing the Brute to Forge Knife by Joe Kiesler, K-E-E-S-L-A-R. It's an awesome book. There you go. More Christmas presents. It's a great book, and he goes step by step on how to heat treat a knife with a torch. He's a cutting torch, which I told you not to do, but he does it anyway. I'm sure he knows more than I do about it. And he did what Craig suggested, which is an edge quench. So there you go. Thank you, Burroughs Forge, for sending me that. That's a good tip. You know, sometimes we just shoot our mouths off without, you know. What can you do? But that's right. So, boom.
Nice.
I was trying to say before that it's doable. I've done it, but you got to really know what you're looking for.
Yeah, it's not like slapdash. So it's not a slapdash situation. No. You have to kind of.
And if you're gonna try to learn it, learn from somebody who's done it, because watching videos is gonna do you no good, because the color on video is not the same as what you see in real life. especially when it comes to how bright the steel can get. And so, yeah, it's working with somebody who knows how to do it and has done it is the best way to learn it if you really want to do it that way. But I say get a heat treating kiln.
All right. Boom.
Yeah.
Or okay. Christmas presents.
Let's go on with a bunch of questions we got this week. So we've got Zach Heidi Blacksmith in has asked, what's a good temper cycle for O1 tool steel? What do you guys think?
I've never used O1 tool steel, so I'm sending
really?
It out.
Ah, okay.
I'm sending it out.
I use it quite a lot, so I always go for two cycles, generally around about... Oh, this is where we get the Fahrenheit and Celsius mixed up now.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
So in proper temperatures, which would be Celsius, I'd go for about 185. 185 Celsius, which is probably about 370 Fahrenheit, I think, roundabout. For an hour cycle, let it take it out of the oven, let it cool all the way down, and put it back into your hot oven, which is at that temperature again, for another hour. So for that first temper cycle, it's going to the cold oven, and it ramps up slowly. The second temper cycle is going back into that hot oven. And that seems to work for me, so that's what I've always done with O1. But I'm sure, like anything else, there's probably a million ways to do it, but that seems to work well for me.
What's the Celsius? What's the Celsius of your head torch?
You may mock, right? I've been thinking, what the hell is Fahrenheit all about? Celsius is easy. You've got 0 degrees freezing, 100 degrees boiling water. When you're talking minus and pluses, stupid amounts, why would anybody use Fahrenheit? It's ridiculous. I think we should ban Fahrenheit and it'd be just Celsius from now on.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure everybody's going to use millimeters too.
Well, yes. Why not?
You know, all of our listeners.
It's a good system.
Most of our listeners are not American. I mean, I think that most of our fans are definitely not Americans. Like, I would think the majority comes from all over the world. And they're probably screaming, yeah, you fuck you and your 7/16 and your 15th, your 3/32. Go fuck yourself. Hey, what am I supposed to do? I learned how to read a tape measure. I know. Inches and eighths and sixteenths. I'll read it off to you. I can't do the millimeters.
Gotta be easier. Moving on. Hellmax 86 asks, for a beginner smith with the ability to only buy one, would you get a small 4 or 5 inch leg vise? Would that be better than a heavy duty bench vise? He's asking.
If you can get a hold of a 4 or 5 inch leg vise, I say do it.
Yeah.
Well, you got to have a room for it, you know?
That's true. Yeah. I mean, but a regular vise, you're going to have to mount that somewhere anyways.
But you want to, with the leg vise, you want to have something, that little foot that hits the ground. You want to make sure that that's stationed some on too. I know that when we used to build mobile leg vise stations, we used to make sure we had a little ring that little leg kind of held into, because you don't want that thing wobbling around.
Oh, yeah. You don't want it floating. It has to be captured.
Yeah, it's
got to
be
on something.
Captured. It's got to be captured.
Nice.
I got a leg vise, and I got like five of those big vices too. I like those too.
We've got an audio question in as well from Forgework. So he's Forgeworks on Instagram, and he's asking,
when you get a customer and he asks you like, hey, man, I want to have a custom knife bolt, and you start drawing, and he says like, oh yeah, that's cool. And then you're saying like, all right, I want to have half in front and half in back. And then they don't want to pay.
Right. I don't know if you heard that, but he's asking, if you get a customer, you want something specific. So you start drawing it out and so on. And you know, you can ask for maybe a deposit, 50% up front, 50% at the end. You then make the knife, but then you just don't hear back from them. They just sort of go off grid. He's asking, I think from what I can gather, he's asking for ways to sort of negate that so that doesn't happen.
I heard that before, and I thought he was referring to like a guy wants to do it and you do the drawing and then all of a sudden you don't hear back from him before he makes the knife.
Ah, possibly. Yeah.
People are assholes. I mean, that's what it comes down to. There's no fixing this problem. You have to figure out ways in which to, somebody said negate before. I'm going to say negate again. I'm going to say it because you have to figure out ways in which to make this more efficient for you. And part of that is not dealing with the bullshit. You have to just like, this is how it is. This is what we do. and I'm not doing the drawings until you're done. I do have a story that happened to me a long, long time ago, a funny, quick story. But when I was really young, I was right out of college, and I was getting little jobs. And this woman commissioned me to make this big table. And I did, I said, all right, great. And it was going to be a big table with I-beams, and it was going to be this monstrous, like, giant table. And I did the drawing, and some shithead in my family says, you know, you have to charge her for that drawing. And I said, well, I don't think I should, because we didn't arrange for that. And this shithead said, oh, no, 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 she knows that when you put a bid in a drawing, you have got to charge her for the drawing. So this asshole completely pushed me into writing this woman a bill. So I sent the drawing, and then I sent a bill with the drawing. And I said, well, how much should I charge for the drawing? And she says, you said $200 is a good price for a drawing. So I sent her a fucking bill with the drawing. And so the funny part was, I was about to go on vacation with my wife. She was my girlfriend at the time. Back in the day, I used to smoke a little weed. So I smoked a little weed. I was ready to go on vacation. I'm sitting in the – and this is before cell phones. I'm sitting in the – we're packing our bags. I'm getting ready to go on vacation. And I got this phone call from this woman. Who do you think you are giving me a bill? You have some nerve. This is an outrage. And I don't know who you think you are. Who do you think – I am stoned to the gills, and I am fucking freaking out. I'm freaking out because I'm like, I don't know. It wasn't even my idea, and I don't even know. And just forget about it. It was this totally the worst way. So I think what you should do, ForgeWorks, is send a bill with the drawing. Don't send the bill. Go smoke some weed and send the drawing and send a bill with the drawing and see what happens. It's not going to be good. It's not going to be good. Yeah. These things happen. That's a true story.
You just got to be upfront at every point, I think.
I think I stopped smoking weed after that because I was like, I can't take any phone calls. I used to have to pull out the cords of the phone. I used to pull out the cords of the phone because I was like, I can't even answer the phone. My wife would be studying to be a nurse, and I would just like smoke some weed and crawl in like a sock drawer, and I would unplug all the phones like a mental patient. And I'm like, no phones. I'm not answering the phones. Not after that last time.
Sounds like you're smoking the wrong kind of weed, man.
I was crazy. It ain't for me, but that is a funny thing because that totally happened. And I got bullied into sending a bill. I didn't even want to send the bill. And then it was the worst possible way to get the...
That's a good lesson, kids. Don't do drugs. Don't do drugs.
Yeah. Don't send invoices for drugs.
What's frustrating about the whole thing is, and I've heard a few conversations around this, is that when it comes to art or graphic design, people expect artists to do work on spec before even getting paid. And it's you don't go to a fucking lawyer and have a consultation for free.
Well, but you
costs you money.
But a contractor,
like $200-$300.
But a contractor has to bid. You know, when I was working for this metal shop, they would have to come up with bids for jobs, and they would have to go over. Sure. They would have to spend time going over blueprints and figuring out how much steel they had to buy, and then they had to come in with a price that was gonna be reasonable for their shop, including all the man hours, how long it's gonna take, blah blah. And if you don't get the job because your bid's too high, then you don't get paid for that. Mm-hmm. That's business. You have to come in with bids that, you know, you have to eat it. You can't just draw. That's why that woman screamed at me. She's just like, what the fuck are you doing? $200? Forget it.
I think any sort of creative process, it's quite often sort of just overlooked, and people don't necessarily realize the time that's gone into it, you know?
Right.
So when you're talking about drawings, or whether they could be drawings, or whether it could be design work or whatever, people don't realize that that's taking part of your working day. That should be billable hours, really.
Well, but so the key is you have to set that. You have to set that. So ForgeWorks, you got to set the tone right off the bat, saying, "I'm not doing anything until you give a deposit." I think deposits are important, and we've gotten a lot of questions about taking deposits and stuff. I think it becomes a show of faith, a good faith and commitment. But like for me, I do drawings all the time because in my mind, I'm going to use those drawings later down the road. So like for me, it's like. Sure. It's better for me in general, but if the drawings sucked and I was losing money every single one, that would be a problem too.
Yeah, yeah.
People are jerks. People that they don't answer. They're jerks. People are jerks.
Hey man, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, Carl.
Okay, Let's go for one more question. So we've got a question from, I think it's Koti Zhao. I think that's his name on Instagram. So it's Kote, I-Z-A-O. And he, apparently he's asking for a friend.
Yeah, maybe.
But he's asking, how'd you get rid of that smell of burnt antler? And I know what he means. That smell is disgusting. It's burnt hair. It's disgusting. But
I was at the dentist the other day, and I smelled that smell because they're grinding on my teeth.
Yeah.
Is that the vet? Yeah. Is that the vet or the dentist?
They're drilling on your ivory, baby. They're giving that tusk a fucking polishing. Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. It's an awful smell.
I think if you can smell it, you're probably inhaling it. So if you can smell it, you need to be wearing PPE.
Yeah, PPE.
Because that could be nasty, nasty stuff. All those fibers getting into you. This can't be good.
Well, and he's saying burnt antler. And so I would suggest maybe using some sharp belts.
Oh.
Slow down your motor if you can, or slow down your belt if you can. Use a dust collector if you got something.
Good answer.
Even just a little shock vac. Do everything you can to collect all that stuff because it is a horrible smell. It's terrible. Mm. It's so bad.
You know what? You made a very good point. A sharp belt, a new belt, and a slower speed is going to take away a lot of that burning.
Mm.
Especially if you've been using that belt before on steel. You use that belt before on steel, you load that thing up with steel dust and it'll burn your wood up too. So you got to have that fresh antler belt. You have to have a belt pile for your antler belt. Right?
You want to use like an alumina oxide belt because it's better for soft material and it's also designed to actually break down so the belt is continually kind of revealing fresh abrasive. So it'll continue to cut sharp until you wear down through the abrasive. But that will also help reduce down because if you're working with stuff that won't break down, working on a belt that won't break down, it's going to start loading up and getting all nasty, and that's going to start frying and burning up your antler too.
Yeah, burn up that
aluminum
antler.
Oxide's going to help you out.
Yeah, don't burn up that antler.
Mm. And talking about belts and the ways of using belts, I did a live video this week on the Knife Talk podcast account asking about those, you know, those arrows that you get on some, particularly the heavyweight belts. You get the arrows showing the direction of travel. And I wasn't sure whether they were put there by the manufacturer to say you only use that one direction or were they there so the user could determine where, you know, when they've sort of half used the belt, then turn it and use the other half. I wasn't sure. So I asked the question, had a few different answers, but basically most people were saying they do turn it round. They do get an extra bit of life. But I then did get a response from a belt manufacturer, a guy at Preferred Abrasives. And he said that they come from the factory. So when that factory make these huge, big rolls of abrasives before their belts, they'll have these arrows. Simply because they don't know if the maker of the belt is then going to overlap them on the join. Because if it's overlapping, you obviously can't go the other way because it'll rip your belt apart. So, for example, the belts that I were using, they weren't overlapped. So the join there was a tiny little gap. So essentially that can be used in either direction. It's only if they're being overlapped you really need to adhere to those arrows.
Very good.
Well, and what's interesting, I didn't really think about those arrows. I've seen them, but I've never thought about what they mean at all. I just use the belt, however, any direction.
I listen. And I listen. I always am like, oh, it's supposed to go this way. That, 'cause I don't know if you've ever done this before, but if you've ever loaded a bandsaw blade backwards and then wonder why nothing is happening. I've done that. I mean, I loaded a brand new expensive bandsaw blade backwards. I didn't check which direction the teeth were going. And I'm sitting there, we're cutting a piece of I-beam, and I'm like, what the fuck is happening with this goddamn new belt? And I look down and I bent all the teeth more backwards. I basically made I ruined the belt in 1 minute. The blade. So, you know, I always listen now. Watch those arrows, baby.
Or not in this case. Yeah.
Or not in this case, but I always pay attention. I surrender to the authority. I surrender.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
So Ross Voslo, again from Instagram, has asked, as an up-and-coming part-time bladesmith looking to and really praying to make this my full-time gig, how do you get out there? He lives in Zimbabwe, so it's difficult to get out there and physically speak, which I don't quite understand. But so any tips on how to potentially grow online would be a massive help. And that was from Ross from Zimbabwe.
Now, I would be very interested in what it's like being a knife maker in Zimbabwe. And I would think if you do, like, you kind of have to create, like, some sort of strain. I mean, it's interesting. I think he's probably a very interesting person. I live in cold New York. I'm wearing 3 sweatshirts right now. I would be interested to know what it's like to be making knives in Africa, you know. And I think that you can do once a week, do some, you know, create some interest. I think that you have to tell your story. And that's nowadays, and I talk to my buddy Jonathan Porter, and I talk to all these guys. We talk about this potential for a bubble. Is the kitchen knife business going to be saturated? What do you do in that situation? And I always come to the conclusion that you have to set yourself apart from other people. I would say that it would be interesting to know what it's like, what you do. And I would say that you have a story to tell, and what's your story, and get people interested in what you're doing. That's the only thing I can suggest. Use social media to your best.
I absolutely agree.
And I think, you know, we're in a golden time. I don't think location's got anything to do with it.
Zero.
My business hasn't changed from moving from the UK to France. And I'm here in the middle of nowhere in France. You know, I'm certainly not in Paris. It's very, very different. And that really hasn't changed things. So, I mean, you're saying it yourself, you know, growing online, that's the key. You've got exactly the same tools available to you as everybody else out there. You just need to think maybe outside the box and think a bit cleverer. And as Jeff says, you know, show your story, because yours is going to be very different to everybody else's.
And just to show you about how local doesn't mean anything, my beef, I'm going after some local people. So just to let you know that how it does not matter. It does not matter in terms of business. I don't, you know, so I would be fascinated to know what it's like. I know that, you know what, he also posted a video about what to do with old belts. Like he was actually did a short video. He was loading up he's a real good podcast guy.
Oh, right.
I know he does a lot of, so he's taking these little belts and he was loading them up with polish or rouge, and he was using those belts as a polishing. He's a, you know, a resourceful guy, you know, so I'd be interested see more. I'd be interested to see more of his, you know, where he's at. What's his deal?
For sure. I follow a guy named Gary Vaynerchuk, and he's been pretty influential on how I approach using social media as a platform to kind of tell my story and kind of document. And one of the things he always talks about is documenting, not creating. So not to overthink creative content. You know, what kind of stuff should I videotape or take photos of? Is the lighting right? His thing is to document and tell your story. And I think that's what's brilliant about what Alex Steele has done, is that he's just documenting his story, his process of learning how to become a blacksmith and a bladesmith and learning all these different skills, showing his successes as well as his failures. But what's the opportunity is to create a community that connects with you in a meaningful way, and not because, you know, you make a thing, but because of who you are. And I think, just like you both have been saying, you know, being a maker from Zimbabwe, I mean, I've never heard of any makers from Zimbabwe. So I think there's a really real cool opportunity to kind of just start using, you know, like Instagram stories or taking video and starting a YouTube channel and just kind of documenting your process of learning, making mistakes, working with other people, your successes, different processes that you've learned. I think there's a huge opportunity, but I think it's a grind, and too many people think that, oh, you know, it's going to happen in like a couple months. No. Alex Steele has been doing his YouTube channel for like 6 or 7 years. That's fucking patience. And he's 19, 20 years old. Like, that's some serious patience. And which is impressive. And even me, like, I find myself getting impatient sometimes. And I got to sit back and realize, like, it's going to take time. If it's going to be something meaningful that has longevity and it's going to last, it's going to take time. The best things that do last, you know.
I know a lot of people who do YouTube channels, and I'm totally for my friends who do it. The YouTube thing can seem like it seems as though it's a second job, all the editing and stuff like that. Oh, that's why
for sure.
I've been doing the Instagram Live for the reason is because I used to podcast and I did the Instagram Live once a week because I wanted to feel more comfortable speaking and try to figure out ways in which to practice being more coherent. And it's paid off. I mean, I think that consistency and trying to get out there and trying to tell your story, it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, there's a one of Joe Rogan's guys, his name is, he's that Australian hunter. You know what I'm talking about, Mareko? He's a green tree, something sure. green tree. His name's something okay. green tree. He's a hunter. And he was doing these incredible hunts and he was doing all this, documenting the hunts on his Instagram stories. And it was intense. Right. So you'd follow him on these, you were with him for 3 days and everything's Instagram stories. And he created this content that was very, very compelling. I think that, you know, I don't know what he wants to do in regards to business but a lot of times nowadays, I think that people are very interested in your story. And that's how you separate yourself out from everybody
Absolutely.
Else. And you probably, in my mind, I'm so stupid. I think that there's like, you know, wildebeest running around behind you, or like lions and zebras and shit. So what the fuck do I know? You know, I'm kind of hoping. That's what I'm hoping for. Be honest with you, I'm hoping like you're like you have to wade through some guinea hens to get to your shop or something. You know,
I think we've all got interesting stories, and social media gives us a platform through which to tell those stories. I mean, Craig is. A Welshman who lives in France, who has a background in tech and digital. You know, Jeff, you used to be a sculptor and you've worked in restaurants and now you're a knife maker. I used to be a fucking hobo.
Hobo?
And now,
you say a hobo?
Hobo.
A hobo.
Not
a hobo.
I used to be a homo.
I used to be a homo. Like, what the fuck does that mean? Why would you say that? A hobo. A hobo.
No, but I was like pseudo homeless for a little while before I finally got my shit together.
Not as funny now.
And I worked in restaurants and, you know, from washing dishes, and now I'm making knives and I love it. And so I think we all have an opportunity to tell our story and using the tools that are available to us, and especially through what Instagram has, and I think that's the best place for especially knife makers to do their thing. Your stories helps you show, like, take a minute to post up a 15-second post every couple hours and just kind of follow through your day. I used to be really good at it. I'm horrible at it now. I've just been so backlogged and focusing on my work, but I need to get back into it, and that's definitely a big goal for me in the new year. But yeah. Use the tools that are available to you, especially ones that are for free, that you don't have to overthink. And that's, you know, Instagram is a good place for that.
Mareko's notes to a new knife maker.
Okay. So this week's notes to a knife maker, we're going to be talking about the S grind. But I actually would love both Jeff and Craig's help in it. I mean, you know, I know how I do it, but, you know, what kind of questions do you guys have about the approach or, you know, I don't know. Where do you think I should start?
Well, here's the question I would ask. If I was doing an S grind, and in the beginning we talked about it, I would get close. How deep do you go?
All right. Okay.
And then how deep do you go? And then where do you make a reference point on your spine? Are you like not, you're staying off like, you know, it's 3/16 off the spine, or how do you plan out how big your how do you plan out how big your S grind is going to be?
Good deal. All right, yeah, that's definitely a good place to start. So, like Jeff was talking about earlier, I don't know if you've tried the S grind yet, but you were talking about doing a flat grind and then taking it to your disc sander and flattening it out. That's basically what I do with my blade. Is I do after I've heat treated it, I pull it out and I do a full flat grind and I take the edge down to about 20 to 30 thousandths at the edge. And then it's a full distal taper from, you know, where the spine and the knife meets the integral bolster all the way out to the tip. And the thickness at the spine for me is usually around 140 thousandths of an inch, which I think translates to about three to four mil.
What's that in, normal? What's metric? That normal measurements? What's that in the New York measurements? Some bullshit. I can't. These styles. When you get everybody says styles and shit, how does that feel? What the fuck does that mean? What?
530 seconds?
Nice. Now we're talking. 530 seconds. I'm with you. 100%.
3 mil just sounds so much easier. Let's go with 3 mil.
Yeah, 3 mil is great.
530 seconds is good. That's a good
one. But I do a full flat, and you can actually, when I first started doing it, I along the cutting edge side, I would just take a Sharpie and mark out about a half inch or five eighths from the edge and just draw a line, you know, using the edge of my finger as kind of a guide down the edge of my knife, obviously not sharp, and mark out how where I don't want to go. And then you just kind of step up it, you know, I don't have any fancy way of doing this other than doing it. You know, I taught myself how to grind a hollow, and all I just did was stand up to the or step up to the platen and shove a piece of metal into it. And so I would obviously do it delicately because
you're focusing on the middle though. You're focusing on the middle of your pathway.
Yeah, and because I start with a 36 grit, I do kind of start in the middle of the blade. And then I kind of, let's see, because of the radius, because of how large of a radius it is, it's a 3 foot radius, which replicates a 6 foot wheel, essentially, which is a giant wheel for grinding on. That you don't have to go very deep to get the width. It's more about like the surface area that I'm trying to expose or cut into. And so it doesn't take much to go very deep. I think by the time I'm done, it's maybe 30 thousandths of an inch deep, maybe only 20 thousandths. It's not very deep. And so
you're going by the width of the actual S grind. You can't really measure how deep it goes.
Yeah, not really. It's not for me. It's not about measuring how deep it goes. It's about watching, you know, I do bring it up to the spine, but slowly at the 36 grit, I start back at kind of my ricasso area, and then gently and carefully and slowly work my way out to the tip of the blade. But because I'm going to have to do consecutive grits, so I go from 36 to 60 to 120 and 220, I know I got to leave room for more growth, essentially, for that hollow to grow. So I don't take it all the way to the spine. I leave maybe an eighth of an inch or I stay off the spine.
And then
about an eighth of an inch.
And then you're stopping like an inch before or like a half an inch before the tip, right? You're not going all the way across.
Yeah, not all the way down to the tip. No, and you know, ultimately too, that's not really where you need the S grind. The S grind is, it helps when you're cutting through, especially most vegetables and that you're going to use in your prep work. And so most of that work is being done in the middle kind of half, I guess, two-fourths of the blade. You know, if you cut it into quarters.
Two-fourths.
One quarter out of the tip.
What's two-fourths in millimeters?
I don't know.
All right.
Anyway, it's 150 millimeters.
Oh.
And then you just kind of work it in and refine it. I do have some videos I actually took a while back when I was Alex Steele actually did a video on doing the S grind on a chef's knife, so I sent him all these videos of me grinding an S grind. So I could put those up, but it's hard to describe. I don't teach because I'm terrible at describing things. I'm better at showing things.
Well, get ready because you just said I'm going to do a video. You get ready for all the words.
No,
video.
No, I have the videos. They're already done. So, and if they work for Alec, they should work for anybody else.
Maybe on the forum. You make people go to the forum.
Well, I'll probably post them on YouTube, and then we can link out from the forum on knifetalk.net/ what is that, /forum, Craig?
No, it's forum.knifetalk.net.
Oh, sorry, I totally fucked that up.
Yeah.
Anyways, and then I'll also make sure to put links, you know, on the Instagrams wherever I can. But if you're gonna try this out, I would suggest just getting a piece of some mild steel just to get a feel for grinding the hollow, because hollow grinding is definitely different from flat. And especially when you're putting it in the middle of the blade, there's not a lot of room for error of up and down and wiggling around and stuff. because you could really kind of mess up how the blade effectively cuts. So getting used to the platen is also a good way to start. But if you're solid, and I don't know how it works, unfortunately, using a tool rest. I don't use a tool rest when I grind, so I'm doing everything freehand. And so when it comes, Jeff might have to do some videos of how to use the tool rest to do the hollow grind.
I'm off the tool rest after heat treatment. I only do the tool rest in the beginning.
Okay.
Before heat treatment,
Right? Sure.
Yeah, interesting. I'm taking the training wheels off, my man.
Yeah, I love it. All right. There's nothing wrong with the tool rest.
I know.
I use a tool rest right to the bitter end.
I like a tool rest. I'm just, you know, bung.
Someone to rest my tool on.
Perfect.
That's some hobo. Careful. That's some hobo shit right there.
But basically, yeah.
That's my favorite thing. My favorite thing in this whole thing is when you got that finger on the button and something happens and you just touch it. Right when the wrong time. I love that. It's my favorite thing.
So basically when you're trying to do the S grind, you're trying to learn it, I would suggest just take it slow, maybe work in some steel, go buy a bar of mild steel to go practice on. But when I'm grinding it, I touch it to the platen just for a couple seconds. I take a look at it. Grind it, look. I'm looking at the blade all the time, like literally every couple seconds, just to make sure I'm not getting off track, because it's easy to do that. But once you lay that initial kind of channel in the blade for the hollow, it's pretty easy to kind of you essentially create a track within which the finer and finer grit belts can kind of ride in. But setting that first one can be kind of tricky. But anyways, like I said, I'll link up some videos and we'll get those up into everybody so that that helps have that visual aspect. Boom.
Well, here's what we do. And just to let you know, if this is your first time listening to this podcast, we do these beefs where some people call them rants. I just think that they're, you know, expressing our irritation at something. And sometimes it's enjoyable for you to hear it, and sometimes it isn't. So we just, you know, this is going to be the last beef, our personal beefs of the year.
Yes. Not so, quite. No. Oh, our beefs. You're right.
This is my last beef from 2018. I don't have any more beefs after this one.
So next week is our Christmas Eve episode, and that's an all beef special.
Beef review.
Already recorded that, and it was lots of fun. So that was beef sent in by the listeners. And just a sneaky peek. This was my favorite. Just a quick sneaky peek.
Right, my beef is people.
That's it. That's all you hear, because that had us laughing. Had us laughing.
Oh, baby.
That's a great accent.
So our beefs this week. I'll kick off. Mine is the community. We've now got a community of knife makers, and we chat to each other. We know each other. We're encouraging.
Don't go bad at anybody. Go ahead. Don't go bad at anybody. I know what you're going at. Go ahead.
You need to get back on the weed, Jeff.
I'll be too paranoid. Go ahead.
But it's people who aren't encouraging. So, I mean, you may put up a piece of work, which, you know, I think I've talked about this in the past. Putting your work out there to others, particularly others who do the same sort of work as your own, can be quite daunting, because everybody's going to have opinions. But I think if your opinion is bad, go away. Don't express bad opinions in such a public way. I think it's just rude. There's a reason why the likes of Instagram and so on have a like button or a heart button, and not a dislike or, you know, or a hate button. There's just no need for it. So if you find something that, you know, that you don't like, you don't necessarily have to just jump in and say, whoa, I don't like that, or, you know, or diss it in any way, because you're not going to do that to somebody in the street. If you see somebody in the street, you're not going to say, hey, I don't like that jacket. By all means, you know, say something nice if you see something that you like. But if you don't like it, you don't have to participate. Just move on. That's my beef.
Well, there is something to be said about, you know, when you're – one thing I will say is when I was an art major, we had to do critiques, art critiques. And what would happen is the whole class would make a sculpture or do a painting or whatever, and then the whole class would talk about it because you're trying to make that person better. Now, the rules really were you had to explain the criticism, but it had to be constructive criticism if that person wanted it. If it's just saying something just to say it, like you couldn't say, like in art critique, you couldn't say if somebody said, all right, what do you think of that? You say it's cool. The art teacher would be like, yeah, I can't really say it. That's not telling me. You have to explain what you like about it, and you have to, extrapolate more in order to help the person. And that's what constructive criticism is. That's being helpful, but unsolicited negativity is not really, it's not good.
Right. I find it strange. I just find it really strange. So,
it is kind of strange.
How do these people get on with their day-to-day lives? You know, socially, they must just be, you know, in a weird place, you know?
It's antisocial.
But anyway,
Anyway. All right. That's a good beef.
my beef, I would say mine is somewhat similar, but it's unsolicited DMs from people. And especially coming from... people who offer or whose business is to offer some sort of supplies for knife making. I've definitely, there's one person in particular I'm not going to mention, but
don't go bad on anybody. That's what I'm going to say. The rest of this beef.
Okay. So I understand being like, oh, hey, I got this new thing. I thought you'd appreciate it. I feel like it really complements your stuff or whatever. That would be nice. Then leave it there. This guy is sending, he'll send like dozen messages all in a row, and I'm like, all right, kid, you're fucking spamming me now, and it's pissing me off. And what it makes me want to do is say fuck you to him and then tell everybody I know not to buy shit from him because he's a spammy motherfucker and I don't like the way he does business. So don't spam people in their DM, because unfortunately in Instagram, once somebody's in your inbox, you can't get them out. So don't make me wish I could kick your ass out.
Whoa.
Basically.
Nice.
Kicking
nice.
Ass and taking names.
That's it.
I'm going to be very petty right now. I'm going to be petty and unnecessary. But that's how it's going to be. This is the last beef of the year, and I'm going to go after someone. I told you guys not to go bad on someone. I'm going bad on someone. And if you hear this and you're starting to say, you are so out of touch, Jeff, I'm not interested, then this isn't for you. But I'm telling you how it is. So I've been involved with these publications, local publications, and it's been nice. It's been fine. And I appreciate it. I appreciate being involved in these publications. And recently, I found out from somebody that I was in a publication, a local publication that I've been in before.
Was that George?
That was George. So I looked it up, and it was like I said, this is petty. But that's just going to have to – we're getting where we're going to get. I'm going to explain why I'm being petty. So the magazine had taken an image from my old website, and they photoshopped it. And then they photoshopped the knives in these weird positions. They spent time photoshopping an image from my website. Then they wrote about how George Fader – makes knives in Peekskill, and then they said, and you can buy these, and then they said signature scales, which the picture that they had were not the signature scales, and then they said that these 8-inch knives will be ready for Christmas. And it was as if they made the whole thing up. Like, I was irritated, and then they said, you know, so, listen, and I'm appreciative, but as you know, as your makers, you're in charge of your heat treatment. You're in charge of your bevel. You're in charge of your sharpness. You don't want other people doing your stuff. And part of that's the content. So I was irritated. It was just like, well, look, the name George Fader, okay, G-E-O, G-E-O-F-F, G-E-O, whatever George is, I get it. But it's like, it was all wrong. And it was like it was like a sentence and a half, and there was five different things that were wrong. I don't want to get emails. I was getting emails, hey, I want to buy George Fader's blue Aiden Chef's knife. Well, they're Christmas. Well, that's not going to happen because they're, you know, they fucked up. So basically, I was irritated because they could have called. They know me. They could have called me. I would have given them a blur. Oh, I would have given them the picture. I would have told them it's not goddamn George, you morons. And at first, I was just like, but then I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to write the editor. I know the editor. I wrote the editor. And I was at first, I was going to write this long letter. I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to write, dear blah blah blah. I appreciate. I said, if I started off nice, and I said thank you for putting me in your magazine, but I just wanted to let you know you got everything wrong. And I said it like that. I said you got everything wrong, including my name. It's not George's Jeff, but you know that. So I just pressed send. It was at 5 o'clock in the morning. I probably could have been a little bit more tactful, but I didn't. I got a response back from this guy. He was so at beginning. It was like, oh, I'm terribly sorry we got your name wrong, but we did put you in this, and we put you in this, and we brought you this, and we brought you this. And he was irritated that I was irritated, and I was irritated that he was irritated that I was irritated, and it was a fucking infuriating because it was just like, you know what, you fucker. And then he was like, well, you know, maybe you should be sending me more stuff that I can put you in the feature. I'm like, listen, buddy, I'm not going to be getting a lot of business from magazines that are just in the dental offices in White Plains. Just relax. But all I ask is just, you know, have a little consideration. And I know these are not this is not the office of a Fifth Avenue magazine. And I know that the magazine business is going under fast. And I know that the new, you know, these guys, they think they're helping. But what it looked like to me when it all came down to it is those guys who take your picture and put it up as their own to sell T-shirts. You're kind of corrupting my content. And if I can't be in control of my fucking content, then what the fuck am I in business for? So that's it. I was just, you know, I know this sounds petty. I know you're probably thinking, God, Fader is in a magazine and, you know, what an asshole for being so. But, you know, you got to be in control of your shit. No, no.
You know, and they're setting you up to be an asshole.
Well, I mean,
then
it was.
Because then those people reach out to you and you have to say no.
Yeah, George.
And then you look like the jerk.
Well, I mean, you know, it's like if the guys who are, it's like the, when the guys took your content, Craig, and then he said, oh, what are you so mad about? I'm promoting you. But you're not really promoting me. You're kind of, you're taking my shit and you're kind of fucking it all up. Well, I went a little bit crazy.
It's lazy journalism and it's fake news, as your president would say.
No, my God. Don't listen. Let's just leave that alone. Please.
I will say, Jeff, I have to thank you because I think it's because of you. Uh-oh. That I was in Vogue magazine.
No, there's no way. There's no way. I have no connections in Vogue. I have none.
You know who runs and does the writing for Vogue? It's Condé Nast. And they own Epicurious.
Oh, you think there was a connection there? Can I make a suggestion?
Absolutely.
Can I make it? I appreciate listen, it. I want to tell you that was a very, very kind thing that you said. It is a huge stretch. I'm going to tell you something about the Condé Nast people. I'm going to tell you something about the magazine people. None of them pay attention. They're all,
somebody
they don't care.
Attention.
They don't care. They're not, they're, I don't think they care. But I'm going to take your thanks as a thank you. I appreciate you and I appreciate all you've done for me. And then blah, blah, blah. I'm with you. I think you're giving me too much credit. I think,
Was that the winter swimwear edition
fucking
of Vogue?
Fucking new worries.
I was the one with Emily Blunt on the cover as the new Mary Poppins.
Fucking hell, Mary Poppins!
Mary fucking Poppins, huh?
Fucking hell, Mary Poppins!
I was walking around the house saying that. Oh, fucking hell, Mary Poppins! All right, Vogue.
If you don't know what we're talking about, well, if you listen to next week's episode, which is our All Beef review, it'll all become clear.
Right. My beef is people wanting to come. They're interested. They want to come and see us make noise.
I love that guy. Love that guy. That made my day. I love that guy.
So that's a show. That's a show. Yeah. So
I didn't tell you my disgusting Christmas story, but that'll be for next year.
Go on, Jeff. Tell us what happened.
Well,
when you
want to know? You want to know?
So
what
did he do to you?
When I was a kid, my parents took me on a trip, and I was afraid that that Santa wouldn't know where I was. So I was telling my mother, "Mom, I'm worried that I'm not at home. What if Santa doesn't know that I'm here?" And so she said, "Oh, don't worry." She changed the subject. She said, "Well, what do you want for Christmas?" And I said, "Well, you know, I really want a brother." And she said, "Well, I don't think it really works that way." And I'm like, "Well, hey, listen, I'm under the impression that you ask me what I want for Christmas from Santa Claus, and I say what I want. That's the, there's no, like, debate. I want a brother. And she said, well, what else do you want? I'm like, ah, you know, a brother. You know, I kept on going with the brother. So all of a sudden, after me saying brother 10 times, my mother said, Jeff, I have something to tell you. There is no Santa Claus. Your father and I are Santa Claus. And I just want you to know that in our heart, we want you to know that the Santa Claus is in your heart because it's us. And I was like, what the fuck? And then all of a sudden she goes, and let me tell you now where children are born. So what happens is now is the father puts his wiener into the mother and then inseminates the eggs. And then all of a sudden that's when the baby comes out of the mom, the vagina. And I'm like, fuck! All I wanted was some fucking Legos, honestly. And it was like, she screwed me. It was the worst. All I wanted were some goddamn Legos. And I got, there is no Santa Claus, and your dad's fucking me. That's all I got! It was the worst!
That's what you get for being a precocious little shit.
Dude, I was being innocent. I was super innocent. I just wanted some fucking Legos, and I was just wanted a fucking brother. I thought that was the deal. But no, I get... There is no Santa Claus and wiener into the vagina. It was the worst. Worst Christmas ever.
Game changer of a day for you.
Terrible. Jeez. True story.
You did it to yourself.
True story. I did get the Legos, though.
You got the Legos. It all works out well. So, that's it. That's the show.
It. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everybody. And we shall speak to you next week.
Merry Christmas, you hobos.
Merry Christmas.